name's Trina Teeler and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for Anthony Gormley's One Another project. The date today is the 7th of October 2009 and the time is 4:15 p.m. Can you please give me your name, age and where you're from?
Yeah, no problem. My name's Tim Myers. My age is 31 and I'm originally from Weybridge in Surrey, but moved to Bristol about 6 years ago. And so I'm from Bristol.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm a little bit wet. It's raining out there, which is a bit of a shame. It's quite a nice day yesterday. It wasn't really nice day to go on the plinth yesterday, unfortunately, but hey, we've got today. And it's quite a rainy country. Quite a rainy country. It's one of the things I often thought is, can we not export fresh water? If we've got so much rain in this country, we have so much fresh water in this country, can't we export it on the empty oil tankers that are coming in from the Gulf? Clearly they surely haven't got enough fresh water. Send the oil tankers back full of water. Oil comes here, water goes out, but I guess we haven't got enough water because we still have drain pipe bans, hose pipe bans, that's it, and various other things. So, my ideas anyway. So yes, it's that's where I'm from Bristol, and for the record, Bristol is a fantastic place. It's really, really nice. I was visiting a friend of mine down there about 6 years ago, and I spent a day and a night in Bristol, and that was enough to convince me. I was absolutely convinced. I actually am going to go up on the plinth today to do a painting. I'll tell you a bit more about that in a bit, but I was actually going to go up to advertise Bristol. So I was actually going to hold up a sign saying something like, are you tired of the rat race? London's a little bit crowded, isn't it? Why don't you come to Bristol? It's really nice. But then I thought, it's a little bit... Yeah, I could rather do something else, really. I mean, it's not that it wasn't the best idea in the world, but I had a better idea, which was to do a bad painting. So, yes, when I go up there, I'm going to do a painting. I'm going to have the National Gallery looking over my shoulder, which is going to be a little intimidating. But it should be okay. I haven't painted since primary school, where I did a picture of a dog. I may do another picture of a dog today. I don't know. I'm a pretty atrocious painter, I've got to say. My dad's quite a good painter, but I think that kind of talent skipped the generations, and it certainly skipped my generation because I'm useless. I do technical drawings, but nothing creative like that. So this is a bit of a new branching out thing for me, and so I thought I'd do it today. It's raining as well. Hopefully that won't affect the paint too much, won't affect the canvas. My dad's taught me how to set up an easel and everything, and he told me, you know, people in the National Gallery are going to be watching, so you better know how to set up an easel. And do some paintings. I may do a picture of Trafalgar Square, may do another picture of a dog, may do a cat, may do a house. You know, a house with like little chimney, little spiral of smoke going out the roof, some windows, some people, my mum and dad, maybe, don't know. Should be good fun.
And what made you decide you wanted to do a painting?
It was a bit of a last-minute suggestion by my dad, actually, because I was a little bit confused about it. I only really decided to do this about a week ago, because your team contacted me quite a while ago and told me that I was going to go up there. So I thought, what am I going to do? I kind of signed up as a bit of a laugh a few months ago. Not sure how long ago, and it was kind of in the back of my mind, but I never actually expected to get it, like most people that entered, I'm sure. And so when it actually came through, it was quite a surprise. And I'd always told people that if I was going to get it, I'd sit up there on a deck chair and read a book or something. And I always kind of expected, if I was going to get it, to get a time slot like 2-3 in the morning, something like that, because it's 24-hour day manned plinth, or woman's plinth, whoever happens to be up there. And so I thought, well, I'll take a torch up and read a book or something like that. But the 5 to 6 p.m. slot is it's quite a high exposure kind of slot, isn't it? So I thought, well, I better do something a little bit more interesting for people than just reading a book and in a deck chair. And it wouldn't have gone down too well anyway because it's raining and it's a bit of a grim day. So about a week ago, I thought, well, I better do something quite interesting. And my dad suggested, why not go up there and painting? Now, since the age of 5, my dad's been trying to get me to paint. Even though I'm an atrocious painter, he still doesn't give up, bless him. I'm his only son, so, you know, he hasn't got anyone else's kids to try and convince how to paint. And he's very keen on painting himself, although he has given up recently and taken up the banjo. After he said that, it was kind of in the back of my mind for a while. And kind of I thought, well, yeah, I couldn't really think of any good reason why not to do it. So that's why.
And what do you do actually in apart from painting?
I'm a facilities manager. I'd previously worked for an architectural practice where I was an architectural technician, but now I'm the facilities manager for a building, or several buildings, in Bristol called the Tobacco Factory. I don't know if you've heard of the Tobacco Factory. It's kind of, well, it's a cafe bar and a theatre and dance studio and several offices. It's kind of owned and looked over by George Ferguson, who's an architect who goes on telly and pretty famous in the architectural world. And he said he might drop along to see me today, actually, which is good. He's my boss. And I'm project manager for him, so I look after the tobacco factory. There's a brewery that we look after, a microbrewery, which supplies all of our beer. Gorgeous stuff, which is Bristol Brewing Company. I don't know if you're still going in the future, but hello, if you're listening. And hello to anyone else who's listening to this, by the way. I'm sure there's some bored researcher who is going through people who went up on the plinth 200 years in the future and is listening to this now. Hello, how are you? Hope you're doing well. Have you got flying cars yet? We haven't got flying cars here. I'm waiting for my flying car. I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime, but if you have, that's great. Oh, and if you've got those little hovering skateboards out of Back to the Future, they look brilliant. If you can, send one back in time to me. That would be fantastic. Where was I? Yes, project manager. We've got a brewery. We've just opened a new dance studio and bakery. That was a bit crazy. And theatre, as well as a little exhibition space. I look after his architectural practice in Bristol, and a pub and a boat, which is also a bar. And that's great, because I've stopped that from sinking, which is interesting. So, yes, very busy, and I've been in this job about 6 months now, and absolutely love it. It's brilliant.
And how do you feel about your dad wanting you to be a painter?
Oh, I don't mind, really. I probably want my kids to be technicians, but they probably won't want to be. They'll probably need something artistic. Because if there is a kind of a skipping generation artistic talent, then I don't know, they'll probably grow long hair and be unemployed for a while. But I don't mind, really. I get on pretty well with my old man. We used to have quite a lot of differences when I was a teenager, but it's what you do with your parents, you know. You want to have something to rebel against. I'd like to hope that if and when I have kids, that I'm sure they'll rebel against me somehow, but I hope that they do it in a relatively safe way. God, that sounds really nurturing and parenty, doesn't it? But yeah, you know, I guess it's just... That's just the way it is, just what teenagers do. But since then, we've, you know, reconciled things. He understands that I'm an atrocious figurative painter. I do a lot of, well, technical drawing, really. I'm a technician, if you like. I guess my art is in problem solving, because I don't know if you've been involved in the architectural sector at all. Well, what tends to happen is the architect is kind of the artistic person, which is... a kind of, I guess, left hemisphere person with a brain who comes up with a lot of very creative things, a lot of ways to express themselves through the form of a building, through, you know, texture, colour, shape, form, various other aspects of architecture like that. But because they tend to be quite creative, they don't tend to be that technical, or they would rather give the technical problems, which I'm sure they'd be able to do, they'd rather farm them out to more technical people, which is very sensible. And I'm one of those more technical people, in that I'm not necessarily a creative person, but if you want to know how to lead a roof, then I'll kind of dive in and say, oh, how's that going to go? Where's the parapet? Oh, how does that work? Where do you want this gutter to drain to? Oh, gutter's got to be that size, lead's got to be that thick, you know. That's how a wall's gone up, and you know, and it's really good because my fiance has trouble sleeping at night. So if I wanted to sleep at night, I just talk about work, which is really good. It's so boring, she falls straight asleep, and I start telling her about the crushing strength of engineering brickwork. That's an old favourite.
So your fiance,
Asked her to marry me a few months ago, although I may ask her to marry me again on the plinth, which is which I think she'd like, because I asked her to marry me over dinner, actually. I think she was showing me a leaflet for something, and she had a mouthful, and I really wanted to marry her, actually. And so I think I said something like, "Do you want to marry me?" And she didn't believe me at first, until I eventually convinced her. I didn't have a ring. I had a permanent marker, which I was going to draw a ring on her finger, but she didn't really want to go for that. We had a trip to Brighton and bought her a ring, and we fixed the date, which is August 7th next year in Bristol, in Lee Court, which is a really nice place. And she's the best girl in the world. I'm a lucky guy. She's fantastic. Glad I found her. We had a first date. Our first date is an interesting story, because we met on the internet. We met on Match.com. And I just kind of exchanged the odd email, and then got phone numbers. And the first day I phoned her was, we went out that night, because we were going to arrange a date for about a week after that, because we were both really busy, and she was I think going to visit a friend in Germany. But I kind of knew that if you talk to someone on the phone, if you're trying to woo them, then it's the heat goes off a little bit. You can't keep a kind of telephone conversation going over about a week or so, because you say all the same things, really, to be honest. So I just suggested that we go out that night, which worked really well. And then somehow, either one of us or both of us, we're not sure who, suggested that we dress as pirates, which was brilliant. It was a Wednesday night, and so downtown Bristol, Wednesday night, I was sat outside a bar. She was late, of course. I was dressed as a pirate, which made me look very special, and I got a lot of looks from people. And she rocked up dressed as a pirate as well. She'd even gone to spent the time drawing chest hairs on herself and a moustache on herself in biro. I was so impressed with that. And we went and got fish and chips and a bottle of wine, and sat in the park, watched the sunset. It was really nice. And so we started going out, you know, 9-10 months later, I asked her to marry me, and that was it.
How long had you been conversing or communicating, I should say, over the internet before you met up?
About a month, I think. About a month, yeah.
And why did you decide to look for someone on the internet?
So I'm just kind of casting your net wide, really, I suppose. Well, I guess there's a different advantages to either approach, really. I mean, so I think a lot of couples, most couples really, meet through family or friends. I guess a lesser percentage meet through work, and even lesser percentage meet through the internet. Through family and friends, they can kind of make a value judgment about your character and the other person's character, and see, think about whether you'd be a good match, which probably happens in some arranged marriages, I suppose. But on the internet, you've kind of got to do a different level of interpretation of the other person and the other person's kind of character and values, everything like that. Also, my best friend, who I was best man for, met his wife on the internet as well, on a different website. And they're going strong. He's doing really well. I'm really glad, actually, because he's just got back from a military tour of Iraq. And he's helping with the pullout from Iraq at the moment. He's just got back, and he's in one piece, which is great news. Really glad about that. And he said he may make it down today, actually, but I don't know, because he works on a military base near Oxford. But said he may be able to skip off work early. Can't name him because he'd probably get in trouble. 200 years in the future, they may retroactively give him a dishonourable discharge for skipping off work early, so unfortunately I can't name him. Sorry about that. He may have a glittering military career ahead of him, but that'll just have to reflect his character more than this today.
And about your painting, what are you going to be painting on the
plate? I haven't a clue. I might paint a pigeon. I might paint Nelson, but he's kind of looking the other way, isn't he? I might paint an interesting tourist. If you get in the right place, I might paint you. Don't know. I could paint. We're in these are porter cabins, are they? Are they shipping containers?
These.
Yeah.
Are they?
Shipping containers or porter cabins? Do you know?
Porter cabins.
Porter cabins.
Yeah.
Okay. If they're shipping containers, I might paint them. But sorry, no. You don't get it. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't a clue. I could paint a picture of the National Gallery. I'm sure enough people have done that. I don't know. I could wait for artistic inspiration, but I don't really have any artistic inspiration, so I might paint the first thing I see. I could paint a picture of a dog again, as I said. I could paint a picture of a cat. Picture of a fish, maybe. Paint a picture of something in the fountains. I'll probably do. I think I probably will do a sketch of Trafalgar Square, as it's seen from the top of the plinth. I won't be the first, I'm sure. I won't be the best by a long way, and there's a fair chance I'll be the worst. But I don't really mind. It's something I can hang in the toilet.
What colours are you going to use? Watercolour or oil? Or
acrylic.
Acrylic?
Acrylic, yes. I've been introduced to acrylic last night by my dad. I never really painted with acrylic before. Apparently you have to keep a piece of blotting paper wet underneath the wet palette acrylic thing. And then you mix up your colours. And then, well, I'm going to try and draw it out. Draw Trafalgar Square out. Forgot to bring a ruler. It's a bit of a shame. A lot of straight lines in Trafalgar Square. So I'll try and draw it out and then kind of try and fill it in so it's going to be a bit like painting by numbers. I might even put numbers in it, actually. That's a good idea. Could do that. That's it.
Will your dad be watching?
Yes, they're parked around the corner. And Mum and Dad are going to come along and have a look. Probably get bored after about 10 minutes and then go and have a look around the National Gallery. My fiancée's in the National Gallery at the moment, actually. She's just knit around there too, because her ancestor has got two paintings in the National Portrait Gallery that are of apparently Arctic, I think, either Arctic or Antarctic explorers. Now, her ancestors aren't the explorers, they're the people doing the painting, but, you know, it's in the National Portrait Gallery, which is not bad, so.
And what personally do you want to gain from going up on the plinth?
I don't want to get a cold, because it's a bit chilly up there, and I think I've got a cold coming on, so I'd like to remain free from flu. What I hope to gain, I'm not going to gain financially. I hope not to ruin my dad's painting materials. I don't know. I'm not particularly aspirational person, I don't think. And I think that can be quite a virtue. It can be a virtue and it can be a hindrance, certainly. If you don't have aspirations, then you don't tend to achieve very much at all. If I'm going to represent something, I think I'd like to represent quiet acceptance of things as they are, because that's the key to happiness. If you aspire for too much and you end up working far too hard, you lose track of what I see as the most important things in life, which are family, your social connections, your friends, your health. And once you lose sight of those things, then you start to obsess over something and all those things go down the pan and you end up in a lot of trouble. You end up in not particularly happy life. So if you're content, it's contentment really is what I'm talking about, I think. It's if you can manage to be content with your life without having to feel that you've compromised too much. I mean, there's some people out there that must think that contentment is some form of compromise. But I don't think so. I don't think so. You have to be quite intelligent about the choices that you make, and but don't lose sight of contentment. And I'm content. I've got a beautiful fiance. We've got a house together. Life is good. Life is easy for me, to be honest. I've got to say, I like to think that I appreciate how easy life has been for me, compared to a lot of people's lives around the world. It's surprisingly so. Actually, and I don't stop being grateful to that. I'm not a religious person. If I was, then I'd certainly be grateful to God. I'd wake up every morning and thank God for putting me in such a advantageous position. But I don't, so I like to try and keep an appreciation of that by not assuming that my opinion is extremely important to the rest of the world. I like to tell people how I enjoy things, my particular opinions, but other people are more than welcome to express themselves as well. Mm-hmm. I'm rambling a bit there, actually, aren't I?
No, I think that's
You know, going off subject a bit.
No, it's no problem. It's interesting. What about your, apart from painting,
mm-hmm.
What are your other interests or passions?
Interests and passions? Well, I keep bees on my roof. I've got a couple of hives on my roof. They're really nice, actually. I like my bees. And I started keeping bees because I read somewhere that eating honey is very good for hay fever. I get quite bad hay fever. And as well as having very light skin, which sunburns really, really easily. So summers weren't good for me when I was a kid. And once I read about that, I decided to start eating honey and discovered that I really like honey. And so I thought, why don't I keep bees? And relatively far off relative of mine, I think, distant uncle, I think, used to keep bees as well. And so they were able to give me some equipment, which I then bought. Well, it was a hive, basically. So a hive comes in several different sections. And I bought another hive and bought a swarm of bees and kept them at my uncle's farm, and which is near Bristol, a place called Castle Carey. And then, well, he hasn't got a farm, he's just got some land there. And then kept them there. They were near an apple orchard, and they produced some very nice apple-tasting honey, which is really, really nice stuff. But it was about an hour's drive from my place to Castle Carey, so I thought, well, there must be a better way to do this. Read about people keeping bees on their roof, and looked into it, and it's no problem at all. So I moved my hive to my roof, and then they swarmed one day, which is a bit scary. So I had to, despite all my precautions, they swarmed, and so I had to run down to the neighbour's garden, going, got shoveled a load of bees into a box and used my spare hive from my uncle and put that on the roof as well. So I've got two hives sitting on my roof at the moment, and they won't be very happy today because they can't fly in the rain, so they'll be kind of sitting around not doing much, really. Probably working on the hive, building it up. Other interests? It's quite sad. My fiance takes a piss out of me for this a lot, but I like reading science fiction books. It's a little bit of a strange one, actually, because there's, I don't know if you read much, you probably don't read science fiction, I guess, or do you? Not at all. There's kind of different genres of science fiction, literary fiction, which is, I guess it splits into two main ones, which is soft and hard science fiction. Soft science fiction is extremely subjective side, which focuses on relationships, psychology, and things like that. Things like, if a robot had a soul, how would it feel? Things like that. Whereas a lot of hard science fiction is done on a very physics-based approach. So there's an author who I read a lot of, who is Welsh, I think. Yeah, he is Welsh. And a former astronomer. And he says that almost all the books that he writes don't break any laws of physics, but they are still kind of quite strange, really weird, futuristic sort of science fiction. And something I'm very keen on, a theme running through a lot of the stuff that I read and the computer games I play and films that I see, especially in a film like something like 2001, Space Odyssey, it's the whole idea that almost everything we do is vanishingly insignificant compared to the scale of the universe, compared to the scale of the Earth. A lot of the stuff we do doesn't really matter an awful lot because the whole universe is just vast and uncomprehending. A lot of people are terrified by that, but I actually quite like it. I don't know why. I guess I'm a little bit weird. But that's quite a, it's an interesting feeling. It's an interesting kind of literary way of evoking some kind of emotion, like you're some kind of small creature in a giant room and you just don't understand what's going on. The universe doesn't understand how you think. The universe doesn't really care how you think. And your mind isn't big enough to comprehend everything. It's got a little bit dark now. Sorry about that. that's something in the stuff that I read. Other interests? I've got an allotment. Very keen on allotmenting. Had a nice crop of potatoes this year. Didn't try for tomatoes this year. Tried for tomatoes last year, but they were terrible. It was a washout last year. A lot of nice potatoes. Got some good onions. Now, I'm only really Johnny come lately for the allotments thing, really. Me and my friend, well, I signed up for an allotment about 3 years ago, something like that, and it took about a year and a half to get an allotment. And I just, a little bit like this, actually, I kind of signed up to see what would happen. And they contacted me and said, we've got an allotment for you, what are you going to do about it? And I was originally going to let it go and say, you'll just give it to someone else. But my friend, who is, my friend Nico, who's French, and he's very, very keen on his food, and he just started going out with a girl who was vegetarian. So he thought, well, great, you know, it'd be a good couple thing for us to do, and grow lots of vegetables, eat the vegetables, learn how to cook vegetarian. And he's recently proposed to her, by the way, which is really good news. And so he said, don't get rid of it, whatever you do. So I didn't, and signed up for it, and about two years on, and it was completely overgrown. We had to dig over the whole thing. It was in a hell of a state. It had been, I think, a bit of a dump for a while at the bottom, and it had been overgrown for the best part of 10 years, something like that, I think. So me and him took this allotment on together and split it up between the two of us. He got the bottom part, I got the top part. It's quite thin. It's about 30 metres long, but it's only about 4 metres wide. So it's a bit of a weird one, but we've put some paths in through. We've got a shed in there now, which is a big step. And growing season's pretty much finished now. I've got some broccoli in there at the moment, which is not good. My fiance hates broccoli. But next season, I'm looking at having about 5 raised beds because it's on quite a steep slope. It's a bit of an engineering project for me because I wanted to put in raised beds terraces made out of wood. So I think, to be honest, I may have been more interested in the making of the wood and the carpentry and stuff than actually growing the things, which is a little bit of a fad thing to do, actually. And I have to be honest, I have gone off honey in the last 6 months a bit as well, but I like keeping bees, so I tend to give the honey away, and it goes down really well. A lot of people really like it. I certainly enjoyed making up these raised beds, and it's nice to grow vegetables and stuff. It's good stuff. I'm going to start with carrots and parsnips, and actually some vegetables that she likes, not many. She's a fruit person. You know, you tend to get fruit or vegetable people. She's a fruit person. I'm a vegetable person. But we get on.
Unfortunately, I have to stop you here, but thank you so much for that.
Was that all right?
Brilliant.